May it please the court. I'm Harvey Flewelling, registration number 22605. I represent Rocky Mountain Motorists Incorporated doing business as AAA of Colorado and Pinnacle Assurance. This is a workers' compensation case.
I apologize, but it just occurred to me I'm a member of AAA. Does that present a problem for anybody?
Not me, Your Honor.
Not for the court.
Not for the appellee, Your Honor. Since the appellee's counsel is also a member of the
Here, the main issue is whether the claimant in this workers' compensation case sustained a compensable injury. The administrative law judge found that she was injured while on the employment premises, exiting the premises to leave work, when her foot stopped abruptly on a carpet and she fell and landed on her hands and knees. The judge found that there was nothing unusual about the carpet other than the fact that it was new. He also found that the claimant, when asked what caused her to fall, said, "I don't know exactly what happened." The ALJ, based on those findings, concluded that she proved that her injury arose out of and in the course of employment. The petitioners here appealed, and the Industrial Claim Appeals Office affirmed the ALJ. They rejected our argument that the judge's findings were insufficient because he failed to identify what the cause of the fall was. They also rejected our argument that, if anything, this fall was unexplained and therefore not compensable under the Finn case. The statute 841.301.1c governs the conditions of recovery of workers' compensation benefits. That statute says the claimant is entitled to benefits if she proves an injury arising out of and in the course of employment. This is a two-pronged test. Arising out of deals with the time, place, and activity limitations of the employment. Arising out of talks about what is the cause of the injury. And the claimant is required to prove both these prongs. Arising out of that requirement is the claimant must prove a direct causal connection between the duties, functions, or conditions of employment and the injury that was sustained. Yes.
Gathered from your brief that you agree that under the definition in course of that is not an issue here. It's the arising out of that is the only issue.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay.
That's the only issue.
And when in the arising out of the is that related to the fact that the person had already was off the clock, or that they were the location, or
something? No, none of those, Your
Honor.
Okay,
thank you.
All those factors have to do with whether she was in the course of.
So so the place and the time and the location are not a problem.
Those are not a problem.
Okay.
The question is, what caused this injury? What caused her foot to stop on this carpet and fall?
Let's suppose she were negligent. Would that prohibit an award?
That factor alone would not prohibit the award. I mean, workers' comp is a no-fault system, but the question is, well, the judge didn't even make a finding that she was negligent.
I understand that, but let's assume her foot stopped, which was her testimony, because of her negligence.
I still think there's something more that needs to be found. What is the cause of the injury? Was her the judge didn't find that her negligence was the cause. He didn't find that she was negligent at all. As a matter of fact, her testimony, she was asked, you know, was there someone, well, you're carrying something, were you in a hurry to, she's actually leaving to pick up her husband at the airport, but she denied being in a hurry. As the judge found, the only thing unusual was the newness of a carpet that had been installed at least 10 days before the date of the accident and was heavily used even in those 10 days.
But given her testimony, aren't there three possibilities? Either number one, the carpet caused her fall, she caused her own fall, or a combination of both. Is there any other reason from the testimony that you can come up with as to why she fell?
I can't come up with it. Well, number one, I agree. I don't think you can actually infer from the testimony that the carpet caused anything. The claimant testified, there was nothing, the carpet wasn't frayed, it wasn't loose. there was nothing wrong with the carpet, so.
Do you need that in a workers' compensation case?
I believe so, Your Honor. I think you have to have the claimant to prove that second prong, to prove that it's arising out of a must, show that the cause, must explain the cause of the injury. And that cause has to be related to the functions, duties, or conditions of employment.
Now, if an employee violates a safety rule, that doesn't prohibit an award, although it may reduce an award, right?
Correct. The safety rule statute.
So let's assume here that it was entirely her fault. Isn't it still compensable?
Not necessarily. I mean, having, again, if the injured worker is injured as a result of their fault, it's, that does not preclude compensability. But there still has to be a causal connection, and that, that causal connection has to be explained.
Mr. Fleming, is there a difference between causation and origination? Because I think it's the Madden case that says that the injury has to have its origins in the employee's work-related functions. Are those two words synonymous?
I think so, Your Honor.
Well, if they,
I'm sorry.
I think I agree with you. I think they're synonymous, but I mean, the word has its origins in the employee's work-related functions. I mean, origins just seems like, well, you know, if it had anything to do with her work, and she was on the premises, she was in the process of leaving, but apparently had not clocked out, or even if she had clocked out, it was still the employer's workplace, and you have to go to and come from the employer's premises in order to be working in this particular job anyway. Why isn't this vague origins a little bit different, perhaps, than causation?
Well,
I'm struggling here, right? That the language is difficult.
And I think courts have struggled with this issue because I think there's, mainly Colorado is part of it, according to Larson's treatise, one of the substantial minority of states that hold that an unexplained injury is not compensable. And a lot of courts seem to confuse the in the course of requirement with the arising out of. Now, if you look at the Webster's definition of origins, I think it talks about the beginnings or it emanates from. I really think it, the way the court meant it in Madden, which actually the original case, the Colorado Supreme Court in the Popovich case, that was where they originally used the term or the phrase had its origins in the claimant's work-related functions. I think they meant it was caused by the work-related functions. I think that's the only way, based on the other cases that talk about this two-prong requirement. And again, origin, the Webster's definition is from which something derives or has begun. And that doesn't really explain the cause. And here, the ALJ didn't really even address what caused it other than just to conclude that the claimant proved the arising out of prong of the test. The Industrial Claim Appeals Office basically just said, well, the finding that her foot stopped out on the carpet means that the injury was not unexplained. And we submit, at a minimum, that the award should be set aside and remanded just for specific findings as to what, whether there was a work-related cause or what was the cause, or if not, whether it was unexplained.
Counsel, if she had been walking down the hall and had a little stroke or seizure and fell, would that have been compensable?
Oh, well, under the special hazard doctrine, which we are not, I don't think that's an issue in this case, it may or may not be. If it's an idiopathic cause where a non-work-related cause, there's a non-work-related cause of the seizure or the fainting or whatever, then you look and see whether there's a special hazard of employment that caused or contributed to the injury. The seizure issue, it may or may not be based on whether it's a special hazard of employment. Here, there's been no hazard at all, whether special or not, as that has been identified as the cause of the injury. Certainly, the carpet could have been determined by the ALJ to be the cause, but he didn't make that finding.
Counsel, would you not agree that irrespective of everything else, that the idea of cause under workers' compensation is substantially different than if you were talking about cause in a personal injury lawsuit?
I'm not sure if I agree with that or not.
Well, you don't have to have any employer action in a workers' compensation case to have cause for a compensable injury, do you?
Correct. You don't. Correct. It doesn't have to be employer action.
So that the employee's action may be the cause of the injury, and it would still be compensable if it were established.
I agree. I was trying to think of an analogous situation, and one situation I came up with was if the employee was a butcher and had to handle sharp knives and by their own negligence cut their finger, that's probably compensable because the knife was a causative factor, and that was a condition of the employment that the claimant had to work with a knife. So under that situation, I could see where it would be compensable and probably obviously compensable. But in this case, there's just no finding what caused this injury. And the judge went out of his way to make clear that this carpet was not unusual. It was new, but
does that
didn't take any extra step to say that caused
it. But does that make a difference?
I believe it does, Your Honor. It doesn't explain what caused her to fall. And she didn't know what happened. She admitted this. She admitted that the carpet wasn't unusual in any way.
It sounds like what you're saying is she had the burden of coming in and presenting maybe a carpeting expert to say that there was something wrong with this carpet, that was negligently installed, or that there was some problem with the manufacturer that caused her to stumble.
I don't know if she had to bring in an expert. I don't think she had to bring an expert. Her testimony alone could have been sufficient. But
that's what you're saying. She needed to do something to prove the fault.
If she was looking at the carpet as the cause, then yes, she had to do more than just say, my foot stopped and I fell. She could have fainted and her foot stopped and she fell.
Maybe that is what happened. I mean, that's what the ALJ found, and we're sort of bound by his findings. I realize not by his conclusions, but by his findings. He found that her foot stopped and she fell.
Correct, Your Honor.
And that's quite different from, like, the, I think it's the Finn case, where the guy just passes out and nobody, when he comes to, nobody knows, neither he remembers nor anybody else saw what happened. But here, we know what happened. I know she said she doesn't know exactly what happened because that's what she said, but we kind of know because her foot stopped and she fell. Sounds like she stumbled.
My interpretation is that that finding does not explain the cause of the fall.
The cause would have to be there's something wrong with the carpet, something wrong with her shoes, something wrong with what?
She's in a hurry to leave the office and she misjudged the carpet. Or maybe the fact that it was new and she wasn't used to the carpet and as a result she shuffled her feet and she fell. But here...
Either of those cases would be compensable, right? Either of those scenarios.
What I just said? I think so. But here the judge said her booted foot stopped on the carpet. I think it's just as plausible that her boot had something to do with her falling, but the judge didn't point to the boot, and he didn't point to the carpet as the cause. He didn't point to anything as the cause, and that's why we're submitting it should be
remanded. If it was the boot, would it be compensable?
Then it would be a whole new analysis, I think, as to whether the boot had some relationship to the conditions or duties of employment.
Are we splitting hairs here? Is the general principle that if there's absolutely no explanation whatsoever for the injury, that's the Finn case? You have to prove something happened. But where there is some explanation for the injury that is related somehow to the employment, either it occurs on the premises or it's caused by a co-employee or something happens, she's distracted, then she does get compensation. I mean, are we talking about realistic differences here or not? Because it seems like, I mean, if you're right, then we've got to have some bigger connection than just that it happened on the premises and somebody saw it and somebody actually says, here's what happened.
Because I believe that you have to have that extra step because it's a two-pronged test. And what you just said, I think, goes to whether she's in the course of employment. She's on the premises. She's in the course of her duty. She's leaving work, but I think If there was a cause identified that was related to the employment, that would make the difference here, but we just don't have that identified. And there's another case, the Irwin case, which I probably won't be able to find. It's a published case. It was an unexplained injury. I believe the claimant fainted and tried to prove that that there was a relationship by the fact that she fell on the floor. If I can just have a couple more seconds. And the court, the fact that she fell on a marble wall on the floor, and they did, the court basically held, we're talking about what caused the fall, not what caused the injury, which was hitting the floor. And here, obviously, when she hit the floor, that may be a condition of employment, a floor that she injured her hands or knees on. But in the Irwin case, and I could probably find the site if you need me to.
The fainting would fall under the special provision that you were talking about. Not special provision, but special analysis, would it not?
Yes, Your Honor. But in the Irwin case, and it's 695 P. Second, 763, a Court of Appeals, 1984, and the court there actually said it was an unexplained fall and applied the but-for or positional risk doctrine and held that the claimant failed to prove that but for the duties of employment, she would have been injured.
It's the fainting case?
Yes, this was. Okay. I'm almost sure this was a fainting case.
Okay.
Yes. Claimant fainted and fell to the floor. Thank you.
Members of the panel, Mr. Flewelling, I was listening to one example. Maybe it was an ill-presented example because you referenced the booted, that the claimant was booted. Oh, I'm sorry. I forgot.
Speak as one.
You speak as one. You know, the suggestion, the reason I looked at you, Judge Criswell, was because you brought up comparative negligence, which, you know, was abrogated by the statute under 841-101. And by the suggestion seemed to be that if the claimant wore the wrong kind of boots, it would be the boot that caused the fall, and therefore there'd be comparative negligence, and as a result, wouldn't be covered under the Act. Now, I took pains to cite, you know, the statute dealing with accidents. Interesting words that are in there, which in fact, you know, we read over all the time when we do these cases. You know, it could be the effect of an unknown cause, or the cause of which being known, and unprecedented consequences. That's in that definition 841-201. Now, do I think that resolves the issue that you have to confront here? No. Is this a tough area? Yes. Have I looked at these cases in preparation for going to trial in many other cases? I will tell you in all candor, the findings of fact were made, which suggested that there was not a causal connection. I probably wouldn't be here today, because you don't take on those cases. The judge in this case made the following finding. I mean, he made this in number two. He said, did not know precisely what happened. And what had to cause a fall, other than a booted right foot fall. You know, he never uses the word unexplained. Are we confusing, or is counsel confusing, unexplained with unforeseen, which is what the definition of an accident is? The reality is that the claimant was within the course and scope of employment. That's been actually stipulated. So I was a little confused in the brief because the statement that was made was that the claimant was not performing one of their duties. And at the same time, the cases, and we have bunches of them that talk about personal comfort doctrine, we talk about parking lot cases, we talk about the horseplay doctrine, which shows that there's not a substantial deviance. There's nothing that was a substantial deviance here.
Counsel, in this case, the ALJ found the claimant to be credible,
right,
and found that her testimony that her foot stopped and she fell.
Right.
Okay? But we don't know why her foot stopped. Is that a fair statement?
I agree with you.
Okay. So, given that scenario,
right,
has there been the establishment of, quote, cause, unquote, for purposes of arising out of?
Well, since it was an accident, and since accident is defined as an event occurring with results from an unknown cause, I'd say yes. Now, when you say unknown, is it completely unknown so that it is totally removed from the scope of employment or arising out of employment? No. We know the event that occurred was the stopping of the foot, which then resulted in the injury. It is, perhaps it's beyond my epistemological knowledge to understand how all of this happened, but the reality was the lady's at work, she's leaving work, which is within the course and arise out of employment, and leaving work, she, her foot slips on the carpet. You know, I guess what part of the argument was made, well, did anybody else's foot, well, this happened here, did anybody else's foot slip on the carpet? No. Well, so what? This was the claim. I could slip on this carpet and it's not so new. It's been here, well, I don't know, maybe you did change it. I've been on this carpet before, and I usually don't wear my Birkenstock shoes, but if I was doing that today and I, you know, decided to move a little fast to the table to get away from questioning, I might trip. But that would be within the course and scope of what and arises out of this particular hearing. The claimant is essentially proved her case. I guess that's it. She proved her case. The judge looked at it. Could he have ruled against her? Yes. Do I know how he would have reached that conclusion? No, because that's not a relevant counterfactual situation. We're here because she did win. And that's really all I got to say.
Well, let's parse words here again, because I'm still struggling with this. If the issue is what caused the fall, is it enough to say she tripped?
Yes.
That's you say that's enough. Mr. Flewelling seems to say that's not enough.
Well, again, that's from what I can see and what I can divine from the case law, but let's talk common sense. People trip going up the stairs, and the stair, oh, the person tripped. They don't know why they tripped on the stairs. So each one of you has done something of that nature where you suffered some type of physical discomfort, maybe not, but at least a bruised ego because you misjudged something. And if you're doing that in the course and scope of employment under this no-fault system, and that's it. If you trip, it's covered. If you put up your hand inadvertently and it gets caught in a fan, it's covered. This is what happens when you have, it wouldn't be an accident if you could tell it was going to happen because you'd never do it. And I'm just saying that as an individual, each of us has experienced these same lapses, momentary lapses of attentiveness, or not being totally attentive, not being able to comprehend that even our attentiveness is not going to stop us from suffering what the words are here, I guess, unprecedented consequence of what we've done. But if you look at, you know, you go back in those cases that the question of the U.S. Court of Appeals that went back, and then this the Streep decision, that's case out of Boulder, 706 P. 2nd, 786. You know, you're looking at employees getting injured eating lunch, and you're looking at them getting injured under the personal comfort document, which, boy, that's so wide out, but it's within the course and scope of employment in a no-fault system. And in my world, every day, I am confronted with respondents attempting to introduce fault into this. And they've succeeded in the legislature with the safety rule, with the alcohol, but they haven't succeeded thus far in comparative negligence. And that's really what I think is really the overwhelming view here. Somehow the claimant did something wrong, and she couldn't explain what she did wrong, and therefore it's not covered in the act. But that's not what the act says.
It seems anomalous to say that a claimant has to come forward and say, I wasn't paying attention and tripped, and therefore gets coverage, as opposed to saying, I have no idea what happened and I tripped.
That would be ironic, wouldn't it? Yeah, that would, that, you know, it, but maybe this is a, what, res ipsa loquitur, speaks for itself. Something was going wrong, I think, as Judge Criswell pointed out. You know, she may not have been paying attention. She didn't. She thought she was. She said she wasn't in a rush. Maybe that's how she felt. She was found credible. So whatever she said, I'm here with today. I can't say, oh, this was wrong. I'm just saying she doesn't know what happened or precisely how it happened, which is exactly, that's how I think the judge said what happened. She said she didn't know precisely what happened. She just knew her foot stuck and down she went. Landed on her hands and knees. That's it. See, I was attempting to run away too quickly, I understand. I have nothing further, but I certainly will entertain questions. Thank you.
Thank you both for your arguments this afternoon. The case will stand submitted. We'll get you a written opinion in due course.